Welcome to the Twin Geeks 188. This is Calvin. After an extended break, we're here with Felicia Maroney. How are you, Felicia?
I'm good.
Excited to have you for Cassavetes, and that's kind of like a dream project for me to do for the site. It's funny because I've been trying to get that one together for a long time, and I'm always like, who's ready to do Cassavetes, you know? And I think people know, like, the major, like, overarching works, right? Like, they know the four or five Cassavetes that are talked about, you know? And
Exactly.
I don't think anyone was ready to get into, like, Shadows or Too Late Blues or, you know, like, the early career. So I'm so grateful that you're jumping on. This will be the first of two parts, and we're going to do the early filmography, just, what, first six movies? So what's your background on Cassavetes? What draws you to him?
I think I likely had seen him probably in Rosemary's Baby first as an actor. And because I went to film school, had always heard about Cassavetes. And oddly enough, we didn't watch any of his stuff in film school, but we had a film library in our university. So I just started kind of renting the stuff and going through it. So I did start with Shadows first, because I was just like, let me start from the beginning and make my way through it. And Shadows I liked, but it probably wasn't until I got into, you know, your Woman Under the Influence and stuff like that, that I really, really got, and like, it struck with me. So it was more so of like hearing how important he was and then being like, okay, I knew there was something there that would hit with me, and there was. So, yeah.
I don't even think it hit for me right away. You know, I had already seen like Woman Under the Influence, so I'm like, there's something here for me. I knew that for a while, you know, because I had started with that years ago, and then I went to Shadows, I think it was 3 years ago. I was going to do the whole thing and just like do this podcast, and it didn't click with me at all. Like I didn't get exactly what I needed from Shadows. It just kind of like fell to the wayside for a few years. But then as I'm over the last year, I did my whole Columbo watch, which he's my favorite guest star in Columbo, and he's such a good actor when he shows up in anything. And I felt so drawn to him, and I'm like, I need to do this now, because Peter Falk also, you know, is in some of these movies. I need to kind of experience that. He's just like really good at building chemistry with like his set of players that he uses, right? Like his stable of actors are really good with him. They work under seemingly like a totally different system than Hollywood was under, where it's like rigid professionalism versus, you know, like, I don't, not amateurish at all, but actually just like lived in naturalistic performance.
I agree. I mean, I would go on record saying that Jenna Rollins is the greatest actor of all time. Like, even she's even better than he is. And I love Cassavetes as an actor, but Jenna is next level for me.
I think he knows that, just how he positions her. He like, he knows what he has, and I think he's like so proud of her.
Oh yeah, like, as he should be.
Yeah, of course. Like, however he frames her, it's like, you know, it's not like male gazey or anything. It's just like, this is like an incredible actress that needs to be at the center of every frame. And the framing in a Cassavetes, it's not so precious, right? It's not like all technical work. It's not like Kubrickian, or it's not like a David Fincher movie. It's, you know, it's not precise is what I'm saying. I think it's more fluid in a way. It almost relies on what the actors are doing, and then sets the cameras around what the shape of that scene is. And you, on your own podcast, do you want to plug it quickly? You have a Seeing Faces in Movies, an amazing podcast. I've been listening.
Thanks. Yeah, it's called Seeing Faces in Movies, and essentially what I do is each month I focus on a different director or a cinematographer, so there'll be like 4 to 5 episodes each, and I have different guests on each week, and I, you know, get them to pick what movie they want to talk about, because it's more of a celebration of, and there will be moments where we'll critique the film or whatnot, but it's not so much you know, there's some podcasts that like to like bash on things. And that's fair. That's totally fair. But I'm more of like I want to talk about movies I actually genuinely love. So far it's just been like all hits for me, obviously.
On my end. So you're just like cherry picking like the best of a director to like the best representations of who someone is.
The reason why I have the guest pick is because I could just be like, these are my 4 favorites of it, and be like, okay, who wants to do these ones? But sometimes I'll get a movie that's not necessarily my favorite out of the filmography, and like revisiting it usually on most cases makes me like it more. So far, I haven't had any cases where I've liked anything less,
Sure.
but sometimes it's also like a first watch for me too, where I haven't seen something. So I know you're coming on for my Roamer month, but there's one movie that I'm covering with another guest that both of us have never seen it before. It's like one of his movies
Which is
that
it?
I'm Percival.
It's it.
I'm recording it next week, obviously, by the time this comes out, whatever. But it's like a medieval one, which is weird for Roamer, so I'm excited to watch it.
I think you kind of think of him as like a more like modernist, like French filmmaker. You know, like going into like a medieval setting is kind of funny for him.
Yes.
And he is by far like I've only talked about him once on this show. Like I did Clarice
Yeah.
Nee. I think that was like, you know, 50 episodes ago, but that's by far, you know, Clarice Nee and My Night at Mod's are my favorite movies. So I'll bring a lot to that show. I don't need to spoil it now.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah,
I'm
we could do it
excited for
there.
that one.
It's good. But
Yeah.
here we're talking about John Cassavetes, and around 1958, he, well, even before that, he. What's interesting about Cassavetes that's not even reflected now is he did like rehearsals with his actors. He treated it almost like stagecraft. So, what around like 1956 or 1957, he's already rehearsing his first movie. Like right
Yep.
now, you think like. You don't really have that leeway now to become a director. You're not like, I'm gonna rehearse and then my dreams will come true as a director. You might get the option now, and then you finally get to make your movie and you have to go, you know? So that is something that is almost lost art in the Cassavetes movies because they're very practiced. Despite being seeming improvisational, they're very practiced movies.
Yeah.
Like there's not a rigidity to it at all, but there is like a formal looseness there, and it's a beautiful thing. Even like at the start, he's like self-funding, and he like went on the radio and actually crowdfunded this movie, which just seems like a modern
Yeah.
concept in itself, like Kickstarter or whatever, you know,
I
just like
know.
drawing funds from an audience. Nobody was really doing that in that way, you know. There were independent movies before this, independent American movies even, and he's of course drawing from the independent cinemas of like international markets at this time, who are doing a lot more of this than we were. So he does have a lot of contemporaries, but for what he did, I think it's singular to our market.
Yeah, I mean, it's wild that when we think back at what Cassavetes did, he really paved the way for a lot of people. And I wish more people, I think a lot of directors or filmmakers now are all in some way fans of Cassavetes, but they're not necessarily following the model of it because the way the film studio system is built right now, it's hard to make your own independent film, but sometimes you kind of need to. I have a friend who just finished his first feature length and he crowdfunded to do the post-production. And it's hard work. Like it's really hard work to do. So Cassavetes was doing it basically throughout his entire film career, even though he was known as an actor. So that just shows how hard it is to do things outside of like a big studio.
Yeah, even without a very small independent distributor, I can't imagine like rehearsing a movie and believing it would be done. I
Yeah.
don't feel like I'd get those people's time unless they're like very close friends, which is kind of how it worked for him. He kind of worked from a
Exactly.
stable of friends because he was an actor and he's like an actor's actor. So he was able to really draw from his experience. I think that's why it worked for him, by the way, to transition, because I think without that component, I don't think it would have quite, you know, I don't think he would have had the resources. You can't just become a
No.
director.
No. No, exactly. You have to have like again a group of people who actually also believe in what you're doing and what they're doing to, you know, take their time. So that's why it works.
So he cut this movie twice, which is also like a modern thing, doing a director's cut without any studio, without the studio being like, hey, could you do this for our service? He was just like, I'm just going to do another cut the next year because I'm not, you know, the movie's not finalized. It's not finished. So there's some differences. There's like the Charles Mingus score, and I love Mingus, of course. And he has a very jazzy soundtracks for his first two. Like really cool jazz stuff and like this and Too Late Blues. But that's kind of like interrupted in the second cut. He lost some of like the licenses and had to have it done in-house for the composer. And but I mean like it's still good. It still rings
Yeah.
true to that spirit, right?
I'm wondering now which cut, like, do you know which cut is on Criterion,
I think it's the
the channel?
59 one. I think we have
Okay.
access to the later one. I'm not sure though. I should look, because I'd like to find out.
Yeah, because, like, I feel like when I first watched it, and this is now, oh my God, well over 10 years ago that I first watched it. When I rewatched it for this show, I did notice some differences. So I feel like maybe there is, but I can't remember what I would have watched the first one on it. Obviously, Criterion Channel didn't exist 10 years ago, so it was some DVD at my school that they had of Shadows. But yeah, it's good. It was interesting to rewatch it for sure. It was weird, I found, to rewatch it because it is, I think, an important film, especially if you are a Cassavetes fan and you go back to it and rewatch it. Because I don't know that I'd recommend starting here as much as,
No.
like, I did start here, but I think if you watch his later stuff, then you can appreciate the older stuff more. This one, it was interesting to me because of maybe the casting of the lead, where it felt, because it's like, obviously for me as a mixed race woman who's half white, half black, I had no idea that she wasn't, that she's actually just Italian. It's funny because I'm also half Italian, but I was just like, oh, there's no way I would have known. And I find it kind of a little weird, the casting a little bit, because I think they could have found someone who, and I like her a lot, she's great. I just think it's a little weird that he didn't go for someone who was lighter skin, who's also black, because you're using the black and white, so that it could have worked. It's playing off a lot of older Hollywood films, where there's a lot of older Hollywood films that we've seen. The what's that, Imitation of Life, Douglas Sirk, where it's like a white woman who's supposed to be technically black, her mom's black, but she's very light. But it's a white actor, and at this point he could have gotten someone else, but yeah.
Sometimes they just like felt like they could get away with it with black and white, I felt like, and I was just like,
Yeah, very
it's not
much.
really fair in the like what you need to cast this role for. Like, she's good. I mean, she is very good in the part, but that's kind of irrelevant to whether she should be cast in that part, right? Like, it's not
Exactly.
about that. It's about, it's almost about colorism, and it's almost about like these shades and racial dating, and it's about that, right? Like, it's funny that like Cassavetes would be the guy to make that movie at that time, but he did
Yeah.
make that, and so that could have been a consideration for sure.
Yeah, exactly. It's, yeah, it didn't really hit me the first time I watched it, but just rewatching it now, being older and probably knowing more about the film than I obviously did when I first watched it, being like, oh, it is an interesting choice, but I won't hold it against him.
Okay, sure. Yeah, 58. Yeah, I mean, like, the pool is smaller that you could cast from, but that means you need to, like, that means you need to create it. If you're doing an independent movie, there's no reason. I see that as
Exactly,
more
yeah.
reason that you should cast that role, because if your heart's really in the story, then you would do that. But, a lot of difficulties making any film in any situation, and he worked with what he had for sure. But, yeah, I won't hold it against him, but it could have been better for that. And as a movie, also, it's just, I mean, it's like partway there in his style. It's striking, and it's different, and it feels new still. It feels like they're experimenting in a way. And it feels like they
Oh,
know,
yeah.
it's shaky, it's handheld, it's kind of feels in the moment, feels like the camera's there with them. It's not what the studios were doing at this moment.
No. And like, I watch a lot of movies from that era. I love, movies 50s, 60s, and it feels fresh, but it also feels a bit dated, obviously, just because of even the style of acting or the story. But I'm sure then, this coming out, like, I'm shocked that it came out this early. It feels like it's something that would have been attempted maybe in the 60s, the later 60s, going towards the 70s era of American cinema. But yeah, 59, 58 is kind of wild that
You would think
he,
68 for
yeah.
sure, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Where you'd be like, yeah, that makes sense. Where they're actually just like, I don't care, I'm just going to do what I want. And he that's how, you know, he's one of the pioneers of what we got in like the 70s in American film, where it was just like peak, at least for me, that's peak American cinema.
I don't know if you could totally get to the 70s without someone like Cassavetes just being like, what about not using the system, you know?
Yeah,
Because that almost
exactly.
makes the system like fold its cards and be like, okay, we'll incorporate you again.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like
Exactly
you
that.
almost need someone like him to have like the Coppolas or, you know, like the Easy Riders or Raging Bulls or whatever.
For
It's
sure.
important. It's like a stepping stone to get there, for sure.
Yeah.
I just rewatched it last night, so it's maybe the freshest for me. And I was more struck by it than the first time, for sure. Which I just emailed or messaged you about, direct messaged you about. It's like a, my feeling about Cassavetes is the more time I spend with it and the more time I'm like in it, it grows on me. When I'm not expecting a plot and I just go in for the movie and I've already seen it, I feel better about myself.
Yes.
I'm not looking for something that's not there anymore because I know it's not there.
Oh yeah, that's exactly how I feel about all this stuff, because I think the first time you just kind of have to like take it in, and there's a lot going on in these movies,
Yeah.
even if there's maybe not actually technically a lot
Sure.
going on.
Yeah.
But when you are like, okay, I've done it, you give some time and you go back to revisit it. I think I've enjoyed every single movie of his more on the second watch. And there's some, I'm sure on, I know on the second part we're covering Killing of a Chinese Bookie, but that's the one that struck me. I've seen it probably now 3 times, and like the third time was like, oh wow, now I think I finally get it. So I'll save
I'm
that for
so
then, but like,
excited. I'm
yeah.
so excited about that. Like, I know this is all kind of preliminary, but we have to do this to get to there,
Oh
too.
yeah,
So,
exactly.
oh my God, that will be an amazing show, I think. I can't, like, it would have just been an episode in itself just to do, like, any one of those three in the next episode, I think. And a couple in this one are worth it, too. Like, Shadows is, I could spend longer on it, but we should keep moving through the movies. Too Late Blues is probably the one I spent like the least time with. Like I kind of just watched it. I was like, Cassavetes kind of disavowed it. I don't think it's that great personally. It didn't get the casting that he wanted and that he was searching for. How do you feel? Are you warm on it?
So this is the first time I'd watched it for the
Okay.
show, and it had been on my list for ages, but it had was just like the last one I just hadn't gotten around to. And I was sitting there with a copy of it, and I was like, I'll watch it one day, I'll watch it one day. And when you asked me to do that, I was like, okay, this is the one day I'm gonna
That's the
watch it.
chance, yeah.
And it, I think I get it being like a subpar, in quotes, Cassavetes movies. I think if I separate myself from it being a Cassavetes film and just think of it as a film from that era, I think it's good. I enjoyed it for what it was. As a Cassavetes movie, it really has very little of him in it.
It does, yeah.
But as a film on its own, if I didn't know that he directed it, I would have been like, okay, this is fine. I don't know that I'd go back and rewatch it, but it was fine for what it was. I really liked the female lead in it. She was great. And I thought the opening was really interesting, and I think it plays off a little bit of like what Shadows is doing and the race relations
Oh,
there.
yeah. Yeah, it's kind of almost a repeated pattern. Like the studio saw that and they're like, "Oh, you did that without us. Why don't you do it with us?" You know? Like, what if you did that same thing
Exactly.
but with us again, you know? What if we get in on
Yeah.
that possible money and what if we get in on American independence cinema? And it's not how it
Yeah.
works, you know?
No. Yeah, it's fine. I think, yeah. Again, I think I'll just say as a Cassavetes movie, it's like on the lower spectrum as a film from what year is it? It's 1961. It fits within that the era for sure. And the look of it is good. I think
Yeah,
I love the
looks
cinematography,
okay.
and I love the way it's shot. And Stella Stevens, I liked a lot. Bobby Darin, I've seen in quite a few films. I thought he was good enough here.
Yeah, first
But
non-singing role for him too, so
yeah.
he actually gets to like play a full character just as a character.
Yeah,
That's cool.
exactly. So, but it's like, it's definitely one I think that what people who are Cassavetes fans probably haven't seen. And I don't know that I would be like, you have to see it.
Yeah, I see the movie he wants to make in it too, like the possible casting of Montgomery Clift, which he really wanted, who's just one of my favorite actors of that time.
Oh
Like
my God.
I think it would be
Love him.
extraordinary if he had like the Montgomery Clift and the Gina Rowlands movie that he wanted. Like that would have been incredible. It would have been, it would have been great, right? It would have been another repeat of Shadows. It would have been like, okay, this is another stepping stone to where we're getting, but it just kind of feels like, if anything, like a lateral move. Like it's just kind of, we're just moving to the side and we're kind of repeating, but the David Raskin score is good. It's jazzy and bluesy. It sounds right. It suits the material. But yeah, this is, it's not his most troubled film. We're about to get to that soon, but maybe second most disavowed by him. He just doesn't like the cut and doesn't feel like he had enough control of it.
Yeah,
Yeah,
that's
even down to
fair.
the casting. I think it's okay though. I don't need to
Yeah.
revisit much, but I'm glad I got it in too.
Exactly. Like, I don't know that I'd rewatch it. If it was playing somewhere on TV, I'd be like, yeah, fine, I'll watch it. But
Sure.
I don't go know that I would go out of my way to watch it with that, like, a purpose. But yeah, Montgomery Clift is also one of my all-time favorite actors. And if it would have been him and Jenna, oh my God. Even just to see them two together would have been like a
I
dream come
mean,
true for me.
that would be reason enough to keep rewatching it because that would just be like a
Oh, yeah.
brilliant pairing. Like I see how the movie like is formed just on that idea. Like that's good enough.
Yeah.
Make the movie, you know? But
Exactly.
yeah, I don't know. Making for Paramount is different than having total control and getting to rehearse your movie yourself. This seems like one where he
Exactly.
didn't have that rehearsal opportunity, and it kind of shows in the acting.
Yeah.
Which leads us into his next studio movie, his second one. I think did he only do the two studio movies? Primarily, these are his two known like studio like things he
Yeah.
talks about at the very least.
Yeah.
The Child is Waiting is the next one. At 1963, it feels kind of like a play. It's using children who are actually neurodivergent. I found that very interesting. Like it's he chose non-actors and he's like his vision was just like it's not the children's fault. It's like it's how we view them that is actually the problem. They don't have a problem. I thought that was a gorgeous idea.
It was an interesting one. I watched this one for the first time, maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago, and it just was one that I watched because I knew Burt Lancaster was in it. I'm a huge fan of his. Didn't fully realize it was Cassavetes, and I was like, oh my God, Cassavetes did a film that has Burt Lancaster and Judy Garland in it. That's wild to me. So I watched it, and it's an interesting watch. I have a daughter who is autistic, so it was interesting to watch this movie. It's obviously a hard and difficult watch. It's like, my daughter lives at home. She would not be in a situation like that, but it's
Yeah,
like you, I
it's
have a
hard.
different level of sympathy than I probably would have prior to my daughter. Like, I think we can all sympathize with these children and these parents, and the way they behave, because some parents behave differently than others in this movie. But it was a lot for me to watch it as a parent now.
I agree.
So it's interesting.
Just as a parent of like a neurodivergent kid as well, who's like extremely highly sensitive, you know, like on that spectrum, same spectrum, just like a very specific part of that spectrum. It's like a high sensitivity to everything. Difficult for me in a lot of ways to think of, even think of her in a facility is like so challenging to me. Like it's so outside my view of what could happen. You know, I can't, I don't handle that well thinking of that idea.
It's and then when you're watching it and you're like, okay, this is a different time where they were less aware, and parents just were like, I can't handle this, so you need to go elsewhere. And it's hard to watch, obviously, right? And I think it's good that he chose non-actors who are actually living that life, because it's hard to get actors to act a certain way, like be any sort of autistic or whatnot, because it can come across as really offensive. a lot of the
It
time.
could, I
So,
mean, yeah, if they're not, it's almost guaranteed not to work, right? Because
yeah.
it's not something you could act out. It's a reality that's just like, I mean, it's divergence. It's not a role, you know? It's like
Yeah.
being autistic isn't like a role in a movie. It's reality. And it's
Exactly.
not an actual issue with the kid, right? Like it's just a way that our kids are, and it's okay.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, I always think of it as a, it's not anything bad. It's not even different. It's just a different way of processing information. And I'm glad that he went that route of choosing those actors. And then the actors going around it, like, the Lancaster, Garland, and Rollins, who are also in it. I think they do a good job too. It's an interesting movie. Again, not one that I would be like, you have to watch it if you're a Cassavetes fan. But if you're a
Sure.
completionist, like I
Then
think
you
we
have to
both are,
anyway,
then
yeah.
yeah, you have to watch it. But yeah, it's not a fun watch
No,
for sure.
it's not joyous or fun, but I mean it's fulfilling, it's good, it's important that he tried it. And again, 1963 seems early for this sort of thing in another way. And there's a lot of conflict there from production again for the second time. You wonder why he was so independent. Like so who was it? Stanley Kramer was the producer and wanted Jack Clayton, and Jack Clayton fell through. So we ended up with John Cassavetes, and both would have been fine options. But Cassavetes says that it's more of a Kramer movie, that he didn't really shoot the movie. Like it's like, I think by that he means the messaging and the ideas that he had to shoot were actually Kramer's. But I think that creates like an interesting conflict actually for the movie. Like it's an interesting tension because like. The Cassavetes approach, of course, like remains because he made it, and there's like this strain also with like production wants a formal social message movie, and like Cassavetes just wants, to use technique to make a message movie, and it's like a different thing almost. Like social issue and message movie are different things, and production wants a social movie, and a director. I think what this makes me want to like highlight is that Cassavetes, I think, is like a humanist director. Like I think he works with people and emotions and from a place of empathy. And I think that is why it would be hard for him to let someone else have a say in what this would be, because it could be so deeply empathetic, and it is. It was hard to watch.
Now that I forgot that Stanley Kramer was involved in this, it feels like, and I like Kramer's films, but it feels more of his vibe than a
Yeah,
Cassavetes for sure.
for sure. I think there is like that one interesting shot that I was like telling you about, and I took a little video. It was just like coming in from the credits, and it had already framed the boy in the car going to the institution, but now it unfolds from like children's drawings, and you see, oh, it's just like the same silhouette of the boy, and as it moves in, it's like, oh, it's a woman. There's her hat, and she's expanding, but she's in the car on the same journey, and that shows she's about to have like a transference of like experience with them. I think it's just a gorgeous detail to start the movie with.
I think that shot's really great, and I think the stuff with Jenna is very much Cassavetes because he's working with who he knows. The rest of it less so. It feels more straightforward, but the stuff with Jenna and the way he shoots those scenes with her and just her style of acting is very much the Cassavetes portion of this movie. But yeah.
After this, we have a few years space till 1968, and we get to Faces, which seems like a almost like a total like counter reaction to like you shot part of my movie. This is what I'm going to do. How do you feel about Faces?
Faces is wild. So the first time I watched Faces, I have like a small film. I'm in a couple of film clubs, but I have one with a friend where we call it bucket list, where it's like movies on our watch list that have been on there for ages, and we'll alternate who picks it and be like, it has to, the only rule is that neither of us have to have seen it before. So at some point during that, I picked Faces, knowing that she, I don't know that she has had watched a lot, had seen a lot of Cassavetes movies. And she, I was like, oh yeah, Faces should be fine. Knowing that she also doesn't like abrasive male cinema, and Faces kind of is.
Is
So
that, yeah.
It's yeah, faces and husbands are kind of like parallel in that sense,
Yes.
which we'll get into for sure. But faces, I mean, I enjoyed it. She absolutely hated it, and she talks about it. We have a couple of movies within that like little film group where it's like ones that I've absolutely hated and ones that she hated. Faces is one of her most hated ones for sure that I picked. Yeah, it's a lot. It's aggressive,
It's
and I
very
think this is
aggressive.
him going. Like, again, we've just talked about two movies where he doesn't love and studio system and him just being like, okay, I'm gonna go all out and I'm gonna be aggressive about it. And he does it. He is aggressive. Faces is interesting. And I think, again, I don't know that I'd recommend to start with Faces. I think you need to watch the later stuff, go back and then go Faces and then maybe even go to the older stuff. Because Faces could turn you off
It
where
could
you're just like,
be.
oh, this is too much.
Although if it brings you in, I think you're all the way in at that point.
Oh,
Like
yeah.
if you go for Faces, if you're the right kind of person, maybe you like Buñuel or Lynch or something, and you want something countercultural and extreme and avant-garde, but also independent and theatrical, focused on small details of humans. Like it could be like, I mean, it could become your favorite movie too. So,
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's interesting, yeah.
it makes me think most of that. What's your take on Cassavetes' song that we were talking about? Like, is it
Yeah.
misogynist, genius, alcoholic, or messiah? Which is it going to be? Maybe all four this time.
I think in Faces, it's definitely all four. There's other ones where I'm like, oh no, this is more this, but Faces is probably the most of the all four. Jenna's great. She's the highlight. Seymour Cassell is also great. But there's so much going on there where sometimes you're like, it's overwhelming where you're like, I don't know how to process all the information he's giving me, even though it's incredibly simple story. There's not even really a story. But there's the personalities are a lot. And it's only because I found it to be a lot because I'm like, oh, I know people like this. And it's kind of weird watching them in a film because you don't often get these personalities highlighted in film. And I say that because I grew up in a small town, so this small town behavior for me, even though they were in the city, but they were just like they gave off small town vibes for me. But
Is that what it was like in the small town? Faces was the
very
way
pretty
of
much,
life?
yeah,
Okay.
pretty much. It was just like people like drunkenly yelling at each other.
Sure. Sounds disorienting.
It's a lot, but at least I was like prepped for it. Whereas some people, I think my friend who didn't really grow up in a small town as much, it was like, this is a lot. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, it's kind of like, it is almost like that Buñuelian like grayscale of like faces and like fractured, like it's like an ugly close up if there's going to be a close up. It's not all pretty detail.
Yeah.
A lot of extreme close ups and kind of a minimal format, but it has like a deep function to it. Like the minimalism is deep in a way, if that makes sense. Like it's not narrow. It widens out by being without a plot. It widens what the movie means to me. And you could put a
Yeah.
lot into it. You could be like, this is my small town, or this is my Buñuelian upbringing, or this is my nightmare.
Yeah. Buñuel's a great comparison, actually. I hadn't thought about that, but I think he's great where he's kind of abrasive. I feel like Buñuel's a little cheekier than Cassavetes. Cassavetes is not being cheeky here.
No.
He's just like, he's kind of slapping you across the face with this information and these people, and you can take it for what it is. And I hope that if you, for some reason, started with Faces, that you give him another chance if it wasn't for you. Because you can go back to Faces and be like, oh, okay, now I get what he was doing, because it really leads to some amazing work for sure. And Faces is great. It's interesting to watch it. It's interesting to take it in.
It's a good-looking movie.
Yeah. It's also great performances by everyone.
Oh yeah.
Like, it really is. It's kind of like a fever dream, to be
It
honest.
is, yeah.
Yeah.
And also, like, it doesn't bury the humanity under that. And I guess that's what I mean. Like, it widens the humanity. It doesn't obfuscate it at all. It brings it out, if anything. I mean, not everyone's nice in a Cassavetes movie. So I think that's what we're
Oh
dealing with
no,
when
yeah.
we think about, like, what's your take on Cassavetes? Is He's not always just going to show a nice person, and he's not going to be ironic most of the time. So you kind of have to deal with it.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly that.
I loved this though. This was my first time, and I was just like, "Oh, I love Cassavetes." Like, this is like one of the things drawing me in. So I could have started here, but like, maybe if you're like me, you've listened to the show and you know what I like. Maybe it's like, this is no. Start with like one of the ones for next show, but you know,
yeah.
This is great too. You got to get to this eventually.
It's a personality type. Like, I think I could also start here, but it's like, it's really dependent on your personality, how many movies you've watched.
Don't like start with your family or like your partner, like here, if they're not expecting it, you know?
No.
Like you say, it does bring us like right into husbands. They are like a good pair. They're almost like this, this is almost like the drunken weekend that's like the hangover or something, you know?
Yeah, jeez. Yeah. I remember the first time I watched Husbands and being so kind of like, it takes a lot for me to be shocked by a movie.
Okay.
And this shocked me, where I was like, I
Did it?
cannot believe that he's showing men in this light and he's a man doing it. It's not like it's a woman who's just like, you know, kind of being like, I'm going to show the men that I know and how aggressive and hateful they can be. This is a man doing it, and he's in it too.
Yeah.
And it's like, they're not evil people, but they're just not the best people either. They're just kind of honest. And you're like, oh, the abrasiveness is how honest that these type of men are, because we all know people like that. And again, they're not evil people, but that's just who they are. And you don't get that as much in film, especially told by other men, that type of story. So I was just shocked. I was like, I cannot believe that he's just making these men seem so ugly. And I was just, it's great. I think it's incredibly important.
Okay, so your experience, that was positive, actually. Like, the thing was...
I think it was positive, yeah.
Okay.
Where I was like, I think this is incredibly brave and important that he's doing this. And see, the friend that I keep referring to, she hasn't watched Husbands. I'm like, please, when you do finally watch it, you gotta like live text me the whole time, because I know she's gonna hate it.
Okay.
She's gonna absolutely hate it. But I'm like, I need to know your opinion on it, because it's like, I think I appreciate it, but it's aggressive.
I had to watch this twice. Like, even like in our lead up to this podcast, like in the last couple weeks, I had to watch this twice just to like get like a grip on it, because it was so out of my grasp. Like, it wasn't what I thought it could be at all. So, like you say, I don't expect a man to shoot men this way and include himself in it. I can't think of other examples of that, in fact. So,
No. Only other times that he's done it, like himself.
Yeah,
like,
I think of him doing it to himself.
Exactly. I find any time that he's in a film, he always plays like a kind of ugly character. And I think that's like such a choice from him. And I kind of admire it.
Yeah,
he's like, I'll play the ugly character. Don't worry about it.
No, I think it shows how he means it. Like, it shows that he, you know, he's not just. I mean, he's going to take accountability for that message, right? Like, but also to take, like, you know, Peter Falk, like one of his best friends, is like starring next to him, and then Gazzara is also good. They're so good together. Like, the chemistry of those three is also singular in this. Like, I can't think of a movie where there's that chemistry, and there's that kind of thing a few times with him and Falk, where I'm just like, that's a very specific like male chemistry, where they're like in love with each other, and they, you know, like, I'm serious, like they have like this huge affection, like there's a thing going on there, and it's beautiful, and they're doing this ugly thing inside it too, so you know, it's a really interesting, special thing.
Yeah. I love the dynamic between him and Falk and Gazzara, because I think whenever he works with them, it's just magic from those actors, and who are good on their own right, but they're especially good in Cassavetes movies. And I think that this story, if he had cast actors he didn't have that relationship with, it absolutely would have been so kind of appalling to watch. Where you're
I agree,
like, I can't even like. There's at least this where you're like, okay, I can see that they're actually friends and they seem like they hang out, because they do, but I could seem like these characters do. But if they if it was just random actors, you'd be like, I'd never want to watch this again.
I think it's so antagonistic, which is such a big risk to have done this without like any system behind you. Like if you did this today and it didn't work, this would be the last thing you ever made. You know, you used to get more chances to fail back then. Like you could make three bad movies in a row and keep going. But if you did this right now and it didn't work, you would be over for good. Huge risk. Like,
Canceled
yeah.
immediately.
I mean it, you know, you could cancel like what's in the movie, but he does it so well that you can't cancel him for it. It's
Yeah, it's because I don't think he's celebrating it. I don't think he's like, oh, this is a great behavior. I think he's putting it out there and being honest about it. Like, I never felt like he was celebrating these men's behavior. I think he's just like, this is how certain men are. And you can't change the way they are because they're so set in it. And it's just kind of like, this is how they are. This is what's the deal? And I'm not celebrating it. I'm just putting it out there. But I don't know who would have the audacity to make that today.
Yeah, who's going to? It's going to be like Abel Ferrara, or like someone that's just like out there and
No,
too challenging, you know?
exactly. Yeah,
Harmony
someone who's
Korine,
already
you know?
said it. Yeah, it
Yeah.
can't be like a newcomer doing
They can't be
it.
canceled. They have to be uncancelable, like Harmony Korine or like Abel Ferrara, or you know, someone that's just outside the periphery of the system right now. Doing the same thing. Maybe they have to be following his footsteps. It had like I was so interested, like what's going to be the critical reception back then because it's so like confrontational. I could see something like this coming out and audiences being like, "What? Like we haven't seen this or we're not used to this." Let's see, Jay Cox of the Times wrote, "Husbands may be one of the best movies anyone will see, but certainly the best you ever lived through." I thought that was like an interesting distinction for Cassavetes. Like you lived through his movies. You know, it's not about seeing them, it's experiencing them.
Yeah. That's a great quote actually, because I like vividly remember where I was the first time I watched Husbands and like when I watched it, and I definitely had borrowed it from school, the university, and I watched it in my old room, and I was probably like, I don't know, 19,
Cool.
20 when I watched it, and I was like, I put it on, just like jaw dropped, where I was like, wow, this is
Yeah.
wild.
No, that's how I was. Like, I had to rewatch it just because I couldn't believe what I felt. It
Yeah.
was, yeah. Roger Ebert replied to this review, "Seldom has time given a better review to a worse movie." I thought that was also an interesting distinction. Like, he says it's the best review for the worst movie. It says it shows an important director not merely failing, but not even understanding why. And I think that's what the Time review is even getting at. If you just view it as a movie, you're going to be like, that's not what you do. But if you live through it, if you experience it, I think Ebert's kind of missing what they're saying there, but or he's responding directly to it, but didn't connect that way.
Ebert's takes, like, and I already knew that, and I agree with a lot of his takes, but like when it comes to abrasive men in cinema, he doesn't like it, as far as I know. So this seems like the anti-Ebert
Yeah,
movie.
you think of like the Blue Velvets and the Husbands of the world. It's just they're not for Ebert. He's
Oh my gosh,
sensitive.
his thoughts on Blue Bell, and I'm like, I cannot, I cannot abide by
No,
that.
that's maybe the most far afield he was ever on anything. And I respect just being that far off. Like
Sometimes, yeah, where you're like someone who hates a movie so much
Yeah.
from, and they give their valid reasons why. I'm like, I have to respect it. Yeah,
You're
you do
just so
you.
far away from me that I respect what you're doing. It's,
Exactly.
yeah, because I can't get halfway there. You know, I love
No.
Lynch. I love that style. But yeah, it seems like it did have like a harsh like reaction from most other critics at the time. I see that. Like, I felt that way the first time seeing it. I really do think it benefits and needs like this distribution model where you could go just watch it twice. Just, watch it on your own terms, firstly, but also watch it twice. Like, I could see being stuck in a theater back then, being a woman, or just being not sure what this was going to be. You would be like, without knowing the reception, this wasn't out yet. You'd be like, what the fuck is he doing? Yeah.
Yeah, I think what you said is important. Watch it on your own terms, and then I think maybe go watch his other stuff and then revisit it
Sure.
after you've had a wider scope of what he's doing, because then you'll actually be able, even if you might still not like it, but you'll have a better appreciation for what he's doing because It's still not one of my favorites. It's not one that I would be like, yeah, let's watch Husbands. Right.
Yeah. When you're hanging out with anyone, you're not to
Yeah,
watch Husbands.
but I would recommend it to people who are like, getting into Cassavetes. They'd be like, okay, watch these other ones, and then you have to watch Husbands, and then tell me, because I always want to know what people think about Husbands specifically.
I do think that's important to watch it alone, actually. I don't think it would be very good in a theater, or I don't think it would
No.
be very good to bring someone to. So I understand the critics of that time. Also, because it's so confrontational and abrasive, and but also it's interesting because their chemistry is just so good that you can't really look
Yeah,
away.
exactly.
So Faces and Husbands, like clearly, like my favorites of these bun of this bunch for sure.
Yeah.
We'll have some stronger work on the next one, but I think you might be more into Minnie and Moskowitz than I am. Yeah, it might be more
Yeah.
your thing. You said on your show that's where you'd start if you were watching Cassavetes.
Yeah, and it probably wasn't my one of my original ones that I would start off with, but after rewatching it a few times, I do think that it's still abrasive, and they still get that male character who's one that you're like, I don't know what this guy's doing. Like, I don't trust this man, and I don't think I still, and many times I've watched it, don't trust him. But I think it shows exactly who he is as a director, and how he likes to deal with his actors, how he likes to treat his actors, because he kind of gives them free enough rein to just be who they are and put out performances. And I think that's what makes him special, because he is an actor's director, and this is very much an acting movie. It's just the two leads going out there and just putting their best out. It's a lot. But it's less depressing than I think, like A Woman Under the Influence is. I don't know if that's his biggest one. I think it probably is one of his biggest ones. It's less depressing than that one. But I think it helps you gear up to A Woman Under the Influence opening night and, Killing of a Chinese Bookie. So I would start there. I think I still would now going by, sorry, starting at Minnie Moskowitz. But was this the
Okay.
first time you'd watched it?
Yeah, so I need another time, is kind of what it
Yeah.
is. It's a
I
problem
think you'll
that,
like it better on the
yeah.
second watch for sure.
I wasn't ready again, so I mean, like, it's just that's going to be how Cassavetes is for me. He's becoming a beloved director for me the more I watch and rewatch. And I even like went back and like watched just bits and pieces of these. I'm like, I really love what he's doing, and I love his approach and humanism. And even when he's doing a dark thing, I see his humanity in it, and that's what I like about him. There's some abuse in this and just stuff that I was just like, maybe I need like a.
Yeah.
Again, first time you're processing it, and it's like going into therapy or something. Like you can't like process your thoughts in the session. You almost need to like go and live it for a while and come back to it the next week and be like, okay, now I have my thoughts. Let's go over it again, you know?
Yeah, I think I was the same way the first time I watched this.
Okay.
The first time I watched it, I was so stressed that I'm quite certain, like almost like 100% sure that I was sweating, because I was like, this is so stressful to watch
I
these
was
two
so stressed.
characters get together. And I'm like, please do not be together. You are not correct for one another. You need stable people for both of you to bring you down from where you are. You both don't need to be together. So I was stressed. When you go back and rewatch it, the stress goes away, because you're like, well, I know what happens to these characters, right? And you can appreciate how it is that they got together and why they're together. And even I still don't think they should be
No,
together, but I was
no.
less stressed about it. Yeah, and Cassavetes plays an interesting part in this too, where he's just like a massive pile of trash in this too. But it's less stressful on the second watch for sure, where I was like, oh wow. I think the first time I watched it, I really liked it, but the second time going into it, I was like, okay, this is for sure one of my all-time favorites. Like, I love this.
Okay.
It's great.
Yeah, I'm gonna watch it again based on that. Probably like when we come back in like a few weeks or whatever and do our next show. Maybe I'll like watch it before those other ones and just kind of get like a bearing for what I'm about to go into again. Because I think it's gonna be really extreme what I re-experience and experience in the next episode. Like it's so
Oh, yeah.
much ahead. And this is also an example of, like, we said that Cassavetes set up the example of, like, what would happen in the 60s and 70s to come. And now we're in, what year is it? It is 1971, right after Easy Rider. And based on the success of Easy Rider, Universal Studios, like, bankrolled this for $1 million. So it is, like, a studio movie, but it's evident that there's no, like, conflicting control because they're like, Easy Rider happened, here's a million, do what you can. But then they also cut scenes from the end of the movie, like, which cut was a conflict with their contract with Cassavetes. So now the version we see now has those restored. So that's back to the movie that he intended. So I don't think he disavowed this at all. I think he had total control despite being bankrolled this time, just because of that era. Because of the era he helped create, I think he benefited this time.
Yeah. It's interesting because I know that Easy Rider is kind of known as being like the one film that started off kind of like the 70s American independent.
And it's not, style. And it is. You know, it's.
It
it's
is,
both.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's not.
Both. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how I feel. I'm like, yeah, it is, okay. But it's also not.
It's
like,
absolutely
it is
not.
The one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just the one we have to say. We say that one is like the easy touch point, but there it's because of other things that happened, right? Like, there's cause and effect to every movement in film. You know, things happen because other things happened.
Exactly. So. It's like Easy Rider needed these other films to be there for Dennis Hopper to be like, I can do this. Mm-hmm. And then because that was so successful, then studios were like, oh yeah, okay, fine. We'll let you guys have your own thing. But like stuff like Cassavetes and like, obviously I'm a huge fan of The Swimmer.
Oh my God, Perry movie.
And I always, that's like a year before Easy Rider. And I said, that's also it's in an independent film because it was on of, you know, Lancaster's production company, which is independent. And that was also a precursor, but it's also good that Easy Rider fully pushed it over the edge. I think Easy Rider is the one that pushed it to where we get it. But
once I found out you love The Swimmer so much, I became like doubly interested in having you on because I'm like, okay, you have the right perspective for this show. Because so my experience of like you said, you like rewatch it all the time, and my experience of The Swimmer was I read it in high school. I had to like find this story that I wanted to write about, and I was like The Swimmer, and I kept rereading it. I read it like four or five times because I loved it so much, like the structure of it, just that experience of life. It was almost like Great Gatsby but moving through pools. Like it's like the most like American experience. I don't know how to explain it. It's just like community and movement through spaces and what that means. And then I didn't even know there was a movie for like five more years. So like when I found that movie, I was like, I was so delighted that like it even existed. And it's a beautiful movie. So
I mean, hey, you're preaching to the choir here. Uh-huh. That's my all time favorite. And I think it's just so important to what we get in the '70s in American film, like that. And the person we're talking about today, Cassavetes, like we wouldn't get all those amazing 70s movies that we all still talk about and are still feel so fresh without these people. So
you know what? I think it's always been that we point to Easy Rider because of the attitude in the movie. Like it's the attitude that it embodies is the reason why it's the touch point. Like there were plenty of movies like it right before it, you know, like that was happening for a long time. That was happening in other countries, especially. They were making independent work like that. That was like on the vanguard through the 60s, right? Like France was doing that for 10 years. You know, it's okay. Yeah. We could admit that Godard was doing it, you know?
Truly. Whereas like they are now over it. Like they've already passed by it. Like Germany, Italy, they've all been doing their own thing. But North America, we're a little bit slower to getting things. But like, it's fine. Like, again, 70s American film is just top tier, so I'm grateful for what we got.
Oh yeah, it leads
hoping
to my favorite
era.
Hoping
there's a new
era.
Renaissance. Yeah. I'm just hoping we're getting that again at some point. Doesn't feel like it's coming, but maybe we'll get one.
I feel like we get things in like measured doses now, because there's no monoculture now, so we get things that are like partial movements, because we can't have a full movement. So, like, the A24s and Neons are, like, a partial movement of that happening. But but they're going to turn on that, too, because now they make too much money. And now they're going to make Civil War, you know. Like, they're done. So it's sad.
Exactly. It is sad, but yeah, I'm just hoping we get like a nice good one in our lifetime.
I hope so. Yeah. Just like a big wave of like independent cinema, like being back, and like it's not like Marvel that everyone's like going to see. It's like some like
Yeah.
Megalopolis, maybe. It's like Francis
Hey,
Ford Coppola.
please.
Yeah.
Please. I'm excited for that finally
Me
to
too.
come out when it does, if someone will actually put it out for him, you know, let
Guess
the
all the
man release
studios
his
kind of
movie.
balked at it. You know, they were like, well, we don't want to take the risk. It's like, holy shit,
I
he funded like
know.
100 million of his own money. And
It's yeah, whenever I have a friend that we talk about the Coppola stuff a lot and the fact that he had to fund his own and how sad it is that someone who is so prolific is having such difficulty releasing his own films. And when that story came out, you know, there's a couple other, you know, John Waters is having troubles with his
with
latest one he wants
Loudmouth,
to release.
yeah.
Yeah. And David Lynch wanted to make this animated film and
With
no one to fund it.
Netflix,
It's
yeah.
like, it's David Lynch.
I know, just fund it. Just don't worry about why. It's you already have
Just
the
give him the
why, you
money.
know?
Yeah, just give him money, give him free rein, let him do what he wants to do. It's David Lynch. People will be there no matter what.
I think about what happens when they do it, like Netflix, like kind of like allowing the completion of Orson Welles' The Other Side of the Wind, like a movie that was just sitting there since the 70s, that was like in that spirit, but it was like Orson Welles' contribution to like what that spirit was. And like that came out and it was like my favorite movie of that year. And I'm telling everyone about it. And I'm like, this is a movie from the 70s that's out in 2018. This is incredible. And
Yeah.
nobody would bite on it. I can't get anyone to watch it. So,
It's
besides our
hard.
group, like our group celebrated it so hard. Like it was our film of the year. We did everything we could, you know?
Yeah. It's like film people will celebrate it, but it's hard to get other people to, which I get. And sometimes I forget that, oh, there's people who are not like us. And I don't say that in a demeaning way. I say that in a way like everyone has different interests. But I'm like, oh, wouldn't everyone jump at the chance to watch like a David Lynch or a Coppola movie? And I'm like, oh, I guess a lot of people wouldn't.
Yeah, I guess like a lot of people might not know what that is. Like, it's been a while since
Yeah.
David Lynch made a movie, right? Like,
Yeah, I know.
he
Yeah.
made Twin Peaks: The Return, but that's specialized interest too. That's people who like Twin Peaks, you know?
Exactly. Like, I don't know anyone who wasn't already a Lynch fan who
Right.
watched it.
So, like the last big Lynch
Yeah.
movie is really like, you know, like Mulholland Drive. Like that's like the like big one that everyone knew. You know, it's been a long time, almost 20 years. So it's like kind of
I
like I
know.
understand, but I'm sad.
Yeah, exactly that. I do kind of understand, but I'm mainly sad about it.
I mean, like this website's called The Twin Geeks. I grew up literally 4 miles away from where Twin Peaks is set. Like, you
Oh,
know.
yeah.
Yeah, that was like my area. That's where I'm from. So like
Oh,
it's close to
wow.
my heart. Like I love this stuff. And that's kind of why the website has this name, because we're all from here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you know, it's punny, but it's also too
I
late
love
to
that.
change it 5 or 6 years in. So
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I'm a huge Lynch fan. Both of my parents, I grew up, both of my parents, I remember kind of them watching Twin Peaks, but I remember them as I got older, them talking about it. And I have like an infamous Christmas where my dad and me were like, we're gonna show Eraserhead to my younger siblings, and my sister has never forgiven me for it. But yeah, David Lynch is definitely a family affair for some of us.
Sure.
So very close to my heart, with Blue Velvet being one of my all-time favorites. So
It's funny, like Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me is like one of my favorite movies because it's the most sympathetic movie I've ever seen about victims. Like it's the most pro-victim movie I've ever seen. It's a really gorgeous statement because I had to watch it 10 times to like figure out what exactly that meant. But you know, like once I came around to it, I'm like, this is so gorgeous. Like this is actually doing a gorgeous thing with the people who were lost in the show. Like it's actually a really beautiful statement that wraps that up. But yeah, I mean, there's so many contending movies for Lynch. You know, I love all of it. So.
Yeah. Kind of similar to Cassavetes, where it's like, I think the people who really gravitate towards him, just really kind of want to champion his work. And I know it's like everyone knows about Cassavetes. Even kind of outside of the film realm. I think people have maybe heard the name Cassavetes, but
Yeah.
it's hard to find people who've actually watched more than maybe the big three.
Yeah, because he's made
So.
what, like 11 movies, and people will know him more for being in Rosemary's Baby than
Yeah.
directing all those movies.
Yeah, and
For
it's like
sure.
there's not that many movies, so like there's
Yeah.
no real excuse. Like
Same with Lynch.
just
I think
watch
it's
them.
almost the same amount, you know? Like, it's what, like, yeah, 11, 12, 13. It's in the same range. So,
Yeah.
I think our conclusion is start with Eraserhead and Faces and see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get the family around the
Yeah.
Christmas tree and put those both on. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, it's halfway through the year, so you've got 6 months to, it's not even, it's less than halfway through the year. You've got enough time to plan your Christmas plans. I think you should do a double bill of Faces and Eraserhead and see what your family thinks. You
Absolutely.
know,
It's a
bring the eggnog out.
good litmus test for your family. Just see who they are, like Rorschach test,
Yeah.
see who is who and what they feel about
Yeah.
each
You might
other.
have to cut people out, but it's okay. You've spent enough time with them.
Thank you so much for coming on, Felicia, and I'll be on your show very soon before the next episode, so.
I'm looking forward to it. Thank you so much for having me.
So excited. Thank you, and it was a lovely show. So, we'll be back in like a month with the next one.
Conversations and I post them online for entertainment. It's nice to know at least you listen to the show, because it's quite the possibility that nobody is listening to me. In this modern world, things have changed. Everybody's entertaining. Who's being entertained? Thank you for listening. Bloodshed.